Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies, I interview experts, I share blueprints of things you might try and roadmaps. I tell stories and I share some of my big epic fails that I've made along the way. Because ultimately, I believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And one of the things that I also believe is that teaching is itself an inherently creative profession. And so today on my podcast, the focus is going to be on this idea of the small things we do that make a big difference. And in particular, this whole idea of what does it mean to think smaller to go big. I think that's actually a critical part of the creative process that we can engage in as teachers. And so without further ado, here is this notion of the bay leaves of education. A few years ago, I met a chef and I asked him, so bay leaves, do they even have a point? I mean, you can't taste them. You have to take them out at the end. They seem to just get in the way. Well, he shook his head and he said, nah, it's the opposite. Wait, what? I asked. They're the invisible heroes of the culinary arts. Bay leaves won't give you a distinct flavor. They don't stand out. It can be so subtle you don't even detect it. But what they do offer is depth. They're a small thing that can make a big difference. They're working behind the scenes to amplify everything else. Trust me, bay leaves are a big deal, he said. I realized that bay leaves are actually a very controversial subject among chefs and all culinary experts. I get it. I'm not a chef. Some say that bay leaves don't really enhance the flavor at all. Others say that they don't enhance the existing flavor so much as add a new flavor entirely. And I'm not going to dive into this culinary debate. But it does have me wondering, what are the bay leaves of education? What are those small, seemingly invisible tweaks that we can make that end up having a huge impact on our teaching? Well, what I want to do right now is share a few of my favorite bay leaves in education. Number one, creating question breaks during direct instruction. I once had a student teacher observe how often I ask questions and how often students ask questions to one another, and the results were, well, depressing. 97% of the questions were from me to them. Only 3% were from them to me. None were to each other, right? So kids were not answering and asking questions to each other at all. Now, he did give me a quick caveat. He said that he had scraped two very common student questions. And so I thought, well, maybe those questions are important. And they turned out to be, what did the teacher say? And can I borrow a pencil? Ugh. At that moment, I felt dejected. I felt sad. I wanted to build curiosity and creativity in my classroom design. And this wasn't happening. So what I did is I actually tried a new strategy. During direct instruction, you ask all your students to generate as many questions as they can. You then do a rally robin, which is a Kagan structure, if you're not familiar with that, where they ask questions to one another. They then do this thing called a stand up, hand up, pair up, where they walk around the classroom asking questions. This had the added advantage of functioning like a brain break, where they're able to move around and get the blood flowing. Then they return to their seats and highlight the remaining questions that are unanswered. Now, this was a small bay leaf moment. It didn't require a huge chunk of time or a new way of teaching. This wasn't my foray into project-based learning or design thinking, which kind of felt like a big change that I needed to do. This was a small tweak that made a big difference, though. It allowed me to teach in a way that tapped into their prior knowledge. It taught them how to ask questions. It connected the learning to the curiosity. And more importantly, in terms of the direct instruction, what it did is it allowed from a brain-based perspective, right? From a from a neuroscience perspective, it allowed the knowledge to shift from something that was short-term to long-term. So question breaks, structured question breaks, that's my first bay leaf. My second bay leaf is to record directions in a video format. So now, fast forward a little bit, in my seventh year in the classroom, I asked a student teacher to do a different kind of audit. This time, he observed me and did a time audit. And one of the biggest surprises was that I could easily spend 5 minutes over explaining the directions. Like, I thought I was talking for 1 minute, it would easily be five. This was also when students were most likely to get off task, to be disruptive. So it was sort of a source of disciplinary issues at the same time. At that point, I made a switch. I made screencast videos explaining the directions, showing an exemplar, letting them see what it was, and then I would then play it each class period. And here's how it worked. The average screencast video was only about 90 seconds, so I was shaving time over the course of the year in a significant way. The use of visual formats and the fact that I could, you know, show exemplars also made it easier for students to see explicitly and clearly what was being expected of them. Students who were confused could also rewatch the video with headphones on. And this was especially true of some of my students who were multilingual or ELL students. And then students who missed class could just watch the video directions the next day. So for me, it was a reminder that innovation doesn't have to be big or flashy. Sometimes it's, well, a bay leaf. Bay leaf number three, have students ask for feedback. I've noticed something in my life. If I don't expect critical feedback, I get defensive. But if I expect critical feedback, I'm more open to it. And if I actually ask for critical feedback, it becomes something I genuinely want. I mention this because students often struggle with giving and receiving critical feedback. They don't want to hurt one another's feelings. But critical feedback is vital for growth. One of the small bay leaf solutions is to have students ask for specific feedback. So I created this 20-minute peer feedback process that I really like. It's worked out well for me. But another thing that I've done is I have specifically had them in the first phase of that 20-minute peer feedback process ask their partners for a particular type of feedback that they want. Similarly, in turning in assignments, I've said to students, when you turn this assignment in, please ask me for a specific kind of feedback. Let me know what type of feedback you are actually wanting on this assignment. I might give you some unsolicited feedback regardless, but I promise you I am going to make an effort to actually connect to the type of feedback that you want. Realistic. All right, moving along, let's go to bay leaf number four, turning rubrics into checklists. So I want you to think about the last time you did a project. Chances are you used a checklist or a set of checklists, or if you're my wife, a checklist with multiple sub-checklists underneath. Okay, just kidding, it's not just my wife. I do the same thing. But it's a common diagnostic tool that we use to help keep things on track. There's actually a great book out there called The Checklist Manifesto. And if you're thinking it's some deep, profound, you know, book, monograph, whatever, about checklists, well, it is. But it really is just about the power of checklists. And I love it. So anyway, when students do projects, we often give them rubrics. And there's nothing inherently wrong with rubrics. Rubrics are great for assessing performances, for looking at end results, right? They're a powerful tool. The problem is we don't typically use rubrics as we go, right? Instead, we are much more likely to use rubrics as a summative way, but checklists as a formative ongoing diagnostic tool. So one of the things that I love doing is just turning rubrics into checklists, or better yet, asking students to turn the rubrics into checklists. So have them take a rubric and then read the rubric closely and convert that rubric into a checklist. The fifth idea is to teach verb tenses in math. So I'm not gonna get into this too much here, but I am a huge language nerd. My background is that I taught ELL, And for that reason, one of the things I discovered about math and word problems among multilingual students is that when they don't understand what the word problem is saying, it's not always vocabulary. The assumption is, well, let's front load the academic vocabulary in language. Let's make sure they understand the content vocabulary. But what I realized is that students would come to me saying, I don't know what it's saying. And I would ask them to highlight specific sentences, like just show me what's confusing. And I realized that sometimes they didn't understand passive voice. So I did a lesson explicitly showing what passive voice is and how it works. Others struggled with complex verb tenses. For example, the past perfect progressive verb tense, you know, I had been running. We don't use that often in speech, but we use it in writing all the time. In other cases, it really was context. So in English, we use this progressive verb tense all the time. I would say I'm building a house. But in Spanish, if you're building a house, you know, over months, you're much more likely to say I build a house. We don't say that in English very often. We also use it far more often than you would realize in terms of future activities, like I'm going on a vacation this summer, rather than I will be going on a vacation this summer. Like, we're going on vacation this summer. And that becomes really confusing for students in a word problem where sequence matters. And so as I began teaching verb tenses in a systematic way, I noticed that students were actually able to access these challenging problems and excel in the math. So they already knew the math. What they didn't know what were the verb tenses to allow them to access the actual word problems. So the next idea is number six, bay leaf number six, switching to timed pair shares. I'm a huge fan of Kagan structures. You've already heard me mention that. And I love the think, pair, share concept. But one of the best bay leaf solutions was to shift from think, pair, share to something where we would do a think time followed by what's called a timed pair share. In a timed pair share, each member has the exact same amount of time to share their answers with a partner. This helped me ensure that all students had equal time to share their thoughts. And I immediately noticed that some of the students who were a little bit more quiet or introverted, some of the ones who were struggling a bit with the language, well, they began to share more openly. And extroverted students, they had to start listening a little bit better. And many of my students with learning differences were far more likely to share with a partner in a conversation as well. Now, what if students finish early in a timed pair share? Well, at that moment, the person who is speaking can answer follow-up questions while the person who is listening has the permission to ask questions. Bay leaf number seven, doing a design sprint first. So in doing design thinking projects, I noticed that many students wanted to rush through all of the phases and jump straight into prototyping. They were so excited about making something new that they became fixated on the hands-on element. And I had a hard time getting students to slow down and embrace the inquiry and research elements. In other words, if we just ran with their initial prototypes, it would be shallow. It wouldn't lead to deeper understanding. We need that phase of asking questions and developing a deeper understanding before they can navigate ideas and ultimately create a prototype. So what I began to do is institute a short 45-minute sprint. Students moved quickly through each of the phases of the launch cycle. They didn't finish things in perfectly. It was messy. It was chaotic. But it allowed me to ask students, if we do this again, what do you need from me? And overwhelmingly, students described the need for more time, for revision, for additional prior knowledge. They discovered on their own that great design takes time. And so as we moved into doing these multi-week design thinking projects, I would reference this design sprint as an experiential framework that they could access. It was developing what's called a schema for them. There was a sense of like, oh, we've done this before. I know what to do. Let's do it. And so it was actually giving them some sort of experimental or experiential memories that they could tap into. And again, I just found it to be really helpful in terms of just keeping them excited and motivated. Bay leaf number 8, paying close attention to body language and voice. When I was in my practicum, I had a hard time with classroom management. I could get kids excited and whatnot, but I didn't always know how to, in the moment, create an engaging class dynamic that also kept students on task. And so I had an assistant principal stop by to observe me. He took a bunch of notes, and then he said to me, "Look, it's no secret we're going to hire you next year." And I was excited because, well, at that point, it was a secret to me that they were planning to hire me, and I was super excited. But then he offered a list of positive strategies that he observed, and I was so excited. I had pretty much locked down this job as a social studies teacher, which is not always easy to get. But then he said, "But I want you to remember that you don't teach in your head. You teach in a physical environment, and you need to use that to your advantage." For the rest of the prep period, he walked me through how to use space proximity when discipline issues occur. He had me practice eye contact. He walked me through how to change my posture, take deep breaths, and calmly correct students who were talking when I was talking. I practiced using my authoritative and approachable voice and send nonverbal communications in terms of my expectations, but also how to make it explicitly clear what I expect out of them. So making it verbally clear, but then reinforcing that with nonverbal cues. And then at the end of the class period, he handed me this book called Tools for Teaching, which I love, by Fred Jones. And he said, "Some of this might be too traditional for your style," and some of it was, I will say that. "But remember that you have high expectations for students, and at the same time, you can make it engaging and authentic. You can do both." And I gotta say, that bay leaf changed my world. To this day, I still pay very close attention to concrete physical realities of teaching, and I try to monitor my body language. Bay leaf number 9, changing the negative to positive feedback ratio. So this one is really simple. Instead of doing like 3 glows and 3 grows, or, you know, 5 strengths, 4 weaknesses, 1 question, what I found is the research said really we need about a 4-to-1 ratio of positive feedback to negative. And this comes from psychologists Barbara Fredrickson and Marcial Losada. And so I began to shift toward a better positivity ratio. And I actually aim for about 5 positives to 1 critical feedback. And I've found that when I do it that way, students are much more likely to listen to the feedback and to use the critical feedback. And at the same time, they feel much more affirmed. And when you're learning something new for the first time, the research has also demonstrated that people need affirmation more in the novice phases. They need to be affirmed on what they're doing right. And then later, when they're experts, they actually seek out and sometimes even crave the critical feedback because they've already gained confidence. Their self-efficacy is up. Idea number 10 comes from Adam Grant's book, Hidden Potential, where he talks about making this shift from how did I do to asking what should I do differently next time. And this bay leaf of an idea is a simple change in the way we ask questions. But what you're doing is you're sending a signal that I'm looking for critical feedback. I'm inviting people to be candid in their responses. It also focuses on growth and action, and I get specific ideas that I can use. So each day when I teach a class at my university, I always end our 4-hour classes with a quick little survey of how I did. And I've shifted from asking the question, how did your professor do, to what should your professor do differently next time? And I have found that to be really helpful. Great answers from students. Bay leaf idea number 11 is just simply, if you do inquiry-based learning, do a concept attainment lesson. Give clear expectations. Give students a roadmap for inquiry-based learning and front-load the vocabulary. So the idea is help them understand the concepts, ideas of both the content and the process ahead of time. And if you do that, then actually what we find based on John Hattie's research is that inquiry-based learning goes from a low effect size on student learning to actually a really high effect size. So again, just taking a single class period to do this concept attainment lesson, roadmap of where you're going, and front-loaded vocabulary. And then number 12 is color code your use of AI. So I have this color-coded process that I love using. And, you know, I started with this idea of red being no AI used at all, yellow is some. And I've now shifted to this continuum of human-generated to machine-generated. And I have varying levels with color. So, you know, black is totally human-generated. Magenta is human-generated but modified by AI. Green is the notion of something that is machine-generated but significantly modified by you as a person. And then blue is entirely machine-generated. And what that helps me do in terms of this color-coded system is see visually where are students with their use of AI? What am I noticing? What am I seeing? And again, I found this to be really helpful as a strategy. So those are the key ideas. Those are some of the big bay leaves that I could think of in education. I'm really curious for you, like, what do you think are those bay leaves as well? So you can check out the blog post that corresponds to that. And I would love for you to share your bay leaves there. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a huge favor? If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, would you consider leaving a review and also clicking the subscribe button and telling a friend about it? So telling a friend, subscribing, and leaving a review, like a star review, like maybe more than one star, but that's totally up to you. Just let me know how I'm doing. I would appreciate that. So again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.